Welcome to Voices of the Community. I am your host, Eric Estrada. This episode is part two of a highlight compilation from season one of our special series, Where Arts Meets Impact, and our co-production with Arts for a Better Bay Area, featuring interviews with summit attendees and presenters from our 2023 State of Our Arts and Culture Organizations Summit. Join our host, George Koster, as we highlight the voices of panelists and discussions that happened during the summit workshops, which focused on rebuilding our communities through the arts. Our first voices are Joshua Simon, Senior Advisor for Community Arts Stabilization Trust, and Catherine Reasoner, Executive Consultant for Vital Arts, during a Q&A session on housing for the artist workforce.
So two short questions. One, I was very excited to hear about the prospect of housing being built in the downtown area. That's something that everybody's like, I hope with all the empty spaces and the buildings they become. But how realistic is that? And you know, how, and it's not a criticism. It's me saying, I'm super excited about that. But it seems like there are a lot of roadblocks for anything like that to happen in the immediate future. So I'm curious about how possible that is.
I think it's as possible as we together make it. It will require advocacy. It will require coming together to push to make it happen. So this won't happen if just a developer comes. I mean, it might, but depending on a lot of factors. But there are a lot of roadblocks, as you say. So organizing is important. And at the same time, it has been done in other parts of the state. So there's not a reason it can't be done. And we're in this bizarre moment. CAST was born when real estate prices dropped dramatically in 2007, 2008. And I thought I'd never see another time like this in my life. Suddenly, shopping centers and office buildings are selling for a fraction of what they were. So we have a very small window, maybe a year or two, maybe, to organize. And it's good to see some of my other colleagues from the nonprofit sector here. It's going to take all of the tools we've built over the last 40 or 50 years in community development to pull this off. It's not an easy thing to do. So I'm not saying this is easy, but if we're all in alignment, if we can all come together around it, I do think we can take down some of these buildings and turn them into engines for economic development.
We've got a project in Berkeley. There's a Berkeley Artist Housing Task Force that's been working for 2 years to get the city to agree. That they keep asking developers who are putting up these brand new buildings with market rate housing. They keep requiring that they put retail on the ground floor. So you've all seen the phenomenon of empty retail along all these new things. We've been pushing for, can't we have affordable artists live work on the ground floor to count toward affordable housing requirements, which developers would love to see. We're also looking at empty retail. We've done surveys of main avenues. And thank you for the time alert. And so we're working on it. We've got two projects right now sitting in city planning department where a developer just got tired of waiting. He put in two proposals for two housing buildings with artists live work on the ground floor, which would be part of the development as counting toward affordable housing. City's saying, whoa, whoa, we don't know how to deal with this, et cetera, et cetera. We've got a hearing coming up in a couple of weeks before the Housing Commission to try and deal with some of the roadblocks on some of the language and some of the vocabulary and the targets and so forth and so on. So we're in the middle of that right now in Berkeley, and we've been working on it for a while. Like Josh, I'm optimistic it can happen, but we all have to get involved.
Thank you. And the last question is, I appreciated your example about the house with the pottery wheel, and I'm wondering if the same sort of thematic considerations, so to speak, could be applied to housing that exists in various areas. So, you know, trans artists getting housing in the trans arts district, or, you know, AAPI artists in the Asian arts district or whatnot. If that same sort of consideration is possible, being considered, etc.
I think for the reasons we were discussing earlier, it's hard to do it with state housing regulations. But certain, you know, that's a longer conversation about ways to try and do that. It's definitely something we've been spending a lot of time talking about.
Coming up next are the voices of Richard Raya, Chief Strategy Officer for the Mission Economic Development Agency of San Francisco, Fernando Pujols, Deputy Director of Mid-Market Business Association and Foundation, Jacob Bintliff, Manager of the Economic Recovery Initiative's Office of Economic and Workforce Development, and Laura Papadi, Deputy Director for the Center of Culture Innovation from our Economic Development Through the Arts panel.
Yes. Hi, everyone. My name is Richard Raya. I'm the Chief Strategy Officer at the Mission Economic Development Agency. We're based in the Mission. We serve about 10,000 residents a year in the Mission. We focus on the Latino immigrant community, and we're celebrating our 50th anniversary this year. And we started off by helping residents start small businesses, help entrepreneurs get off the ground, helping families do their taxes. But about 10 years ago, as we were seeing our population displaced, the working class immigrant population, the artists being displaced for the past 20 years, beginning with the dot-com boom, we lost about 10,000 Latino residents to displacement. So seeing that, we knew that we had to do something more than just provide services to folks. So we actually ventured into the affordable housing world, the world of commercial real estate. And we did that by joining with our community and organizing and advocating. A big thing that we did is we flooded City Hall about 8 or 9 years ago, along with many other organizations and many residents, just letting the powers that be know that there's a tremendous displacement crisis in our community. As a result of that type of advocacy then and ongoing advocacy, the city created new funding opportunities for affordable housing, as well as new policies to support that, to align with that funding. So as a result of that, our organization has since then bought 38 apartment buildings and prevented the residents from being evicted. And we've also built 6 large sites, so 10-story buildings with 100% affordable housing. So one of the first persons in our small, what we call the small sites, the apartment buildings, one of the first persons that we saved from eviction was an artist. But there's more to the work than that. With our large sites, our large buildings, and actually on our small sites too, we put murals on all these buildings working with local artists, but we also reserve the ground floor retail space for artists, for art galleries, and for nonprofits in general in the neighborhood that have been serving the neighborhood for a long time. So one of those organizations that got placed in our ground floor retail is Galleria de la Raza. And so I want to talk about the murals though, because this might be one of the most impactful parts of what we do. So we work with local artists. We work with the community to select the local artists as well as to select what the topic of the art on the walls. And one of our buildings, our most recent building, 2060 Folsom, it's 127 units of affordable housing. But on that wall is a 9-story mural of the artist Yolanda Lopez and examples of her work as well. And examples of her work, including kind of showing how the Chicano movement interacted with the Black Power movement and the American Indian movement, and how a lot of this work was taking place in the Mission District and a lot of this alliance building, and that how that's just part of the legacy of that community. And I think what's really powerful about that 9-story mural of Yolanda Lopez's face and her artwork is that when you enter the Mission District from downtown, you see that you're entering a community with a legacy of art, of organizing, of making change. And I love that. And you may not know, but Yolanda Lopez passed away about 1.5, 2 years ago, right before the building was finished. And in part, that's why the community chose to have her on the building. I think what I want to say last is that this work, I can get it. I don't want to go deep on how this is part of just a comprehensive community development initiative that we're part of. We also work with the schools. We also work with small businesses to make sure that they can also afford to stay in the Mission District. But I think what we're seeing is that when the community comes together and organizes and advocates and makes noise and has a plan, we can change systems. And we've seen that happen in the Mission District. That work that I just talked about is actually now a national model. We're hosting folks from all over the country. And so there is something that is working. And there are folks on this panel and folks on earlier panels that are also talking about kind of similar success stories. So it's good for us all to be here together. It's a much needed coming together of voices because we can make change. So thank you.
I'm joined remotely by the Deputy Director of the Mid-Market Business Association and Foundation, Fernando Pujals. Welcome back to Voices of the Community, Fernando.
Thank you for having me. Really delighted to be here today and looking forward to talking.
And staying with that, Fernando, the kind of lessons learned from your field trip, if you will, you've also been in the field and been doing this in, you know, an area that's, you know, sadly for decades, a containment zone, right? When you consider mid-market, SoMa to some degree, of course, you know, the Tenderloin, you know, what are some of the things that you and your team have discovered that are working, not working? And then what would you like to see, you know, community support for, government support for, philanthropy, foundation / corporations to help?
I would love to see, you know, continued philanthropy, of course, and putting money directly in the hands of creative businesses and artists. They know how to spend it and it will return. And I think that we're at a space where diversifying the economy here would be a really good step, and finding other sectors beyond tech. And tech was great. I'm not going to at all disparage the Twitter tax break, because it did drive a significant level of investment here. We have renovated hotels, renovated Class A office, but the world has changed. People aren't working from home the same way. We're boots on the ground because we're a neighborhood organization. Of course we're here. You know, we're really building for residents and visitors, and we think office will come when the neighborhood, you know, begins to show its potential again. But positivity is happening here. And what we saw through the pandemic was just the absence of positivity. And it made the things that were negative that were here much more visible. And again, the fentanyl in the drug market has really done a number on many of our cities, but we're really feeling it here. And it's something we've really got to grapple with. But if you were here this last weekend, there was an art walk. There was an amazing hip hop festival in UN Plaza with an incredible B-boy, B-girl breakdance battle. And it was a space that was welcoming to everyone. You know, folks that are down and out that are here that I recognize from my daily time, they were here and they were happy. And there was this moment of hope and joy that you could see on their faces. And I think we need to really lean into bringing more and more programming and positivity to the area. And for the businesses that are hanging on here, we should support them and subsidize them to get them through this year. And I think that would really go a long way in maintaining the positivity that's happening on the sidewalk. So would love to see, you know, the public sector has been supportive of this plan and our efforts. And we'd love to see more of the private sector foundations paying attention to mid-market. Now, we've entered a place in San Francisco where all the downtown core has vacancy woes and challenges. But I would position that the international reputation of our city is very much coming through the heart of our city, and that an investment in mid-market really floats up all the boats in the tide.
Okay, I'm Brenda Berlin. I am a longtime arts person here in the city since the 60s. I founded the Julian Theater with my ex-husband and now deceased Richard Reinexis, founder of the cultural centers and all kinds of other things, which we can talk about at some other time. So what I want to do is talk to you about what specifically, besides what you're talking about for the arts in mid-market and downtown, how are the housing, what's going on with the housing conversions with the empty spaces in the high rises? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, I could touch on that a little bit. Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, we don't expect the same amount of office demand to be there anytime soon. So we got a lot of buildings. It's actually, you look at that as an asset we have in San Francisco. It's a lot of infrastructure that we've built over the years. And how do we make use of that space for the things that people need to do and want to do now? So in terms of converting to housing specifically, actually, we just passed some legislation yesterday that the mayor and President Peskin on the board introduced to just go through the planning code, go through the building code, get everything out of the way that needed to be done to make it really as easy as we can to do those conversion projects. You know, we have a lot of really beautiful older buildings in San Francisco and all through this area as well that were designed at a time before air conditioning. They have natural ventilation, they have good light, so they can lend themselves to that kind of conversion. You know, the issue really is primarily economic at this point. And, you know, Richard can tell you about that as well. You know, building any kind of housing or any kind of anything right now is very challenging, interest rates and so on.
The very same question was asked in a previous panel. And Josh Simon from CAST, I thought he had a really useful answer. He said, it's doable. The conversion is doable. Money is needed. But if the community can come together and organize and advocate, then we can make it happen. And so I agree with him, because that's what allowed us to do what we're doing in the Mission District. Is we had to go to City Hall. We had to advocate. Our elected leaders put a bond, a housing bond, on the ballot that passed. And that's the money that we use to buy apartment buildings and preserve their affordability. So it's kind of a smaller scale example, but I just want to put that out there. I don't know how we would pay for it, but I know it would cost a lot of money, and it would take advocacy, I think, to make that happen.
Can I say something? I think if you really want the community to advocate, I think you also have to provide some channels and encourage their participation as well, because artists need space and need affordable housing. So the need is definitely there, but people are also, you know, they have their practice to take care of, probably other jobs potentially. So it's there. Give them a vehicle.
We're halfway through our powerful conversation at the 2023 State of Our Arts and Culture Organization Summit. You have heard from the voices of Joshua Simon, Senior Advisor for Community Arts Stabilization Trust, Catherine Reasoner, Executive Consultant for Vital Arts, Richard Raya, Chief Strategy Officer for the Mission Economic Development Agency of San Francisco, Fernando Pujols, Deputy Director of Mid-Market Business Association and Foundation, Jacob Bintliff, Manager of the Economic Recovery Initiative's Office of Economic and Workforce Development, and Laura Papadi, Deputy Director for the Center of Cultural Innovation. Thank you to our incredible sponsors and donors like you for supporting Voices of the Community. Stay with us, more highlights ahead. Voices of the Community is made possible by generous support from the Zellerbach Family Foundation, dedicated to ensuring vibrant work is created, new voices are celebrated, and diverse communities have opportunities to thrive. Learn more at zff.org. Voices of the Community is also supported by the Peaceful World Foundation, fostering a culture of global peace through hosted conversation and education. Discover more at peacefulworldfoundation.org. Welcome back to Voices of the Community, where today's conversation at the 2023 State of Our Arts and Culture Organization Summit focuses on how arts organizations have bounced back from the COVID-19 pandemic. Let's continue the discussion.
I'm joined remotely by the co-founder and COO of Building 180 and the managing director and co-founder of Paint the Void, Meredith Winner. Meredith, welcome back to Voices of the Community.
Thanks.
So Paint the Void was, you know, kind of birthed, if you will, during COVID, and you were, you know, doing these amazing, you know, pieces of art on, you know, boarded up buildings, if you will. Sadly, there's still a lot of boarded up buildings here in San Francisco. What are some of the things that you've seen come out of it for, I think, both the arts artist and artist workforce, as well as the community at large?
Sure. It's actually a good timing because we're in the process of publishing or self-publishing a Paint the Void retrospective book. So it's very top of mind for me these days. And it's been really amazing to read past input from artists that we worked with that say that a lot of the work that we have helped facilitate with them has really jump-started their career so that they have been able to go on and do bigger projects and actually maintain careers as living and working artists, which I think is an amazing outcome. I think that a lot of the difficulty in making public art often comes down to permitting processes and where you actually can place artwork. And even with funding, that can be quite difficult. So kind of navigating through different stakeholders and different entities that have some sort of say in the process is really important to make those personal connections with people so that they know who you are when things are coming across their desk. You have to get really good at doing budget tracking, which is a big thing that we provide for artists that are working on large scale projects, particularly with sculptural artists, that it's a lot of materials to track and crew and transportation and things of that nature. I'm trying to think of other lessons that I've learned. I think really being open-minded and also really trusting artists is a really big important factor, because artists know what they're doing, at least when it comes to making the artwork. That's why people hire them, and allowing them to have the most creative freedom as possible really usually allows the project to be as best as it can be, or as good as it can be.
Coming up next are Joe Landini, founder of Safe House Arts, Vinay Patel, executive director of the Asian Pacific Island Cultural Center, and Denise Pate, director of community investment for the San Francisco Arts Commission from the Proposition E workshop.
Okay, so we get to 2017 and we start organizing Proposition S. 2016.
Yeah.
Proposition S, which then was one of the spearheaders. And we failed miserably.
No, we didn't. No, we didn't.
My version is so much more interesting.
Oh, your version is always darker than what they are. Vin,
you want to talk? Okay, the real version. There we go. Right. Vin will tell you the truth.
Thank you. So in 2016, the Arts Alliance with support from a huge coalition of other organizations, created a Prop S, which was in line with a coalition on homelessness. It was taking these issues of arts and homelessness, putting them together as two core issues for our city. And that legislation, I think, missed passing by like 3%, 4%, something like that. Needed two-thirds to pass. That's not damn sharply. It was, there was other bigger failures on that election cycle in 2016.
Jay. Yeah, that wasn't the biggest gut punch that night.
But also, I think from that legislation as well, that legislation took a big portion of the hotel tax fund in a way that worried city administrators and other agencies that also drew upon that fund. So in 2017, Prop S 2.0 happened, which was the same coalition. It fizzled out. It didn't work. It didn't happen. 2018, we came back with Prop E, which was really a city-led effort, from my understanding. It was folks met with city officials, said, hey, we want you to lead this proposition. We want this to be in line with what you think arts funding should be. We don't want to ask for more than our fair share. So it was a lot less than Prop S, but it was still a huge windfall for San Francisco arts, and specifically because it reconnected that hotel tax fund directly with arts funding. So, nobody knew the pandemic would happen. So it's like short of like an earthquake, we would just continue to grow and grow and grow. Nobody knew this other thing would be coming. How's that for a little cat?
That is great.
So something I'm kind of hearing from you, Vin, is that there's a lack of transparency right now with the hotel tax fund and what's going, like, what is the percentage? What are these brass tax things? And I'm just wondering, does anybody here, and it can be our wonderful panelists or anybody else know, or especially with grants for the arts, they've had a complete changeover of staff in the last 2 years. And what they used to have are these docket meetings where the community was allowed in to get to see decisions and get to see the advisory group make those decisions in real time around who was being funded and why. And so I'm raising this not if anybody knows of any transparency, such as a final, like an annual report or a breakdown of grantees, like it's just, I'm sensing a lack of transparency and that's troubling. And I just want to raise that. And if anybody has any information.
Well, that's a really good segue.
Well, just to be the professor here again about this stuff, just one more point, and then I think that we're going to go the rest of the time talking about what's happened, what's going on, and Denise can talk about, the programs of the Arts Commission as well. But one of the things that what happened right after we hit the pandemic immediately, right? Like we're all celebrating and everything's going to be great. The tourism was on a sky high. We were going to see a 10% bump every year, but that was going to be fantastic. We were on cloud 9, right? But the pandemic hit. And we had written in a 10% floor and ceiling, and it was done by the city attorney. We thought it was ironclad. And then all of a sudden we hear, oh, there's no such thing as a floor. There's no money. There's no money. And basically we're right back at the general fund again. That's pretty much what it was, And so we had to go back in there and start advocating, right? And so a lot of people were advocating again. Like, hey, this cannot be what's going on here. And we have a mayor that's, comes from the arts, understood that. And so what City Hall ended up doing was what they call backfill. They found other money and they filled it. So what that didn't do was fulfill the promise of the 10% floor. It just said, hey, we're just going to come and try to salvage what's going on over here. Right. So that ever since the pandemic, we have not had enough funds in the hotel tax. And is that how you understand it too, Denise? No? Okay. But City Hall and the supervisors have been backfilling to make sure that we don't, have that. And so, and we actually saw a bump, I think, last year. The mayor was able to put a bump into it. So we didn't in the arts, I think the first year there was a slight decrease in the funding for the arts, but since then the supervisors have been backfilling it. And in this year, they said that the hotel tax is going to be level in terms of, and then there might not be need for backfilling. There's enough funds in the hotel tax for it. So Denise?
Well, in terms of the hotel tax, I don't know what's going on at Chancellor of the Arts. I mean, I do. We work a little bit with them in their transition. I worked with them on their guidelines and we worked with figuring out a scenario kind of like the same. Actually, Jason who was there before actually started that, kind of like the Robin Hood kind of scenario, took from the larger organization so that the smaller organizations could have an entry point, like the $10,000 grants. And so we worked on it, but the challenge was, I'm the arts commission person. We have the cultural equity. We have this transparency. And then the grants for the arts, which is a different organization. So I helped them to write guidelines. And then also we hired a program officer to help them work on grant, you know, reviewing the grants. And right now I'm reading grants for the arts, a small portion of them. And what we're doing is we're helping to advise them on creating a rubric that focuses more on community engagement. And so it's a strange marriage. And it's because it's still grants for the arts, the symphony, the opera, the ballet, and then also some smaller organizations. Whereas we're this like really groovy, you know, cultural equity, and we're looking at inclusion all the time, and we're transparent. And so when you were talking about that there was no meeting, you couldn't see what was going on. So anyway, but in terms of like the hotel tax fund, but what I was told with budget this time, that the Arts Commission, we're in good shape. And I was told that the hotel tax was the only tax that's growing, despite all the talk about that, you know, the tourists are scared away, and that the fund, and I looked at each year and the growth that's happening. And so we're good, and we have an increase. But of course we have multiple funds that's coming to the Arts Commission, but property is good. And we have money left over last year.
That concludes part two of our highlight episode of season one of Where Arts Meets Impact, in partnership with Arts for a Better Bay Area. A special thanks to our summit attendees and our panelists, Joshua Simon, Catherine Reasoner, Richard Raya, Fernando Pujals, Jacob Bintliff, Laura Papadi, Meredith Winner, Joe Landini, Vinny Patel, and Denise Pate for their insights on arts advocacy. Visit voicesofthecommunity.com and go to season one, Where Arts Meet Impact, and explore more about our guests, their work, and take action in your community to support the arts. While you're on our website, we invite you to visit season two with California for the Arts. Stay tuned for our next series, Making the Invisible Visible, as we amplify the voices of our unhoused neighbors and the people and organizations that support them.
Today's episode was made possible through our co-production partnership with Arts for a Better Bay Area at their 2023 State of the Arts Summit. Special thanks to our technical crew, audio and video wizard Eric Estrada, and our co-production partner, BayVac Media, and their wonderful team, Paula Argoni, Andy Konami, Siobhan Giles, and Clay Goh. Thanks to Casey Nance from Citron Studios for the graphics magic. A special thanks to our broadcast partners who help share these important conversations, KSFP LPFM in San Francisco, KPCA LPFM in Petaluma, Petaluma Community Public Access TV, BayVac Media's SF Commons, and PEG Media's Public Access TV Exchange. Thank you for your commitment to amplifying diverse voices and perspectives. Please support these partners and our mission by tuning in and spreading the word. Voices of the Community is made possible by generous support from the Zellerbach Family Foundation, dedicated to ensuring vibrant work is created, new voices celebrated, and diverse communities have opportunities to thrive. Learn more at zff.org. Voices of the Community is also supported by the Peaceful World Foundation, fostering a culture of global peace through hosted conversations and education. Discover more at peacefulworldfoundation.org. And we'd love your support to continue to make shows just like this one. Go to voicesofthecommunity.com and click on the donate button to help us continue to bring you unique voices from our community. Take Voices of the Community with you on the go. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Enjoying the show? Please rate and review us on your favorite app. It helps more people discover these important stories. Go to youtube.com/@GeoCoster to watch or listen to all of our past and future episodes. And you can always go to voicesofthecommunity.com and listen and watch our 5 series and from our archives. Have feedback or ideas for shows? We'd love to hear from you. Email George at georgecoster.com. I'm George Costa from San Francisco. On behalf of our team, thank you for joining us. Until next time, remember, your voice matters.